Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob, R8XFT.
Vice Virtuoso.
Narad.
VS.
Hello and welcome to Modcast 80. I'm Rob, R8XFT, and with me today are...
VS.
Narad the Forgiven.
And Ceiling Cat.
Hey, welcome back, Ceiling Cat. Nice to have you back on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. First thing I've been doing is working on another alt leader for the Philippines. Something that we've been sort of had in our back pockets for a while, but finally getting around to for Corazon Aquino. She's called like the mother of Philippine democracy. So I think it's nice when we do a more modern-y leaders because you can pull from like speeches they've given to make their diplos. So her diplomacy wasn't too bad, but now I have to go and just scrape the Wikipedia page for information on her. But it's one of those issues where you know that the leader is like worth having, but it's so hard to translate what they did into civ terms. Because she did a lot of she did land reform. She did sort of standing up to both the United States and sort of the other major powers during the Cold War. But that's really hard to turn into a civ ability. So I think right now what we've got her is that her farms and her plantations are a little bit more productive. And she also gets a massive boost to works of great music and cities with national parks to show how she was influential in sort of turning the Philippines into sort of a vacation destination.
I guess the question would be then, and that's the other half of the mod I know, is part about standing up to greater world powers and, you know, bringing yourself out of sort of the threat of being perpetually colonized. Does that end up being like an agenda kind of thing?
It would if some of the agendas were a little bit more moddable. For example, it'd be nice to be able to take Trajans and attach that to sort of a continental kind of thing. So you had like, oh, she doesn't like larger powers on other continents. But as far as I know, Trajans is kind of hardlocked, which is unfortunate. So right now she's kind of got a placeholder one, which I'm not 100% happy with, about she likes people who keep their citizens happy since she's known as like a pro-democracy sort of leader. And we'll get minuses if the civ is following a different government or if they're not taking care of their citizens' happiness. So it's a little bit vanilla at the moment. So I'm looking to see perhaps how I can spice that up a little bit. Just like you said, to reflect a little bit more Cold War sensibilities on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, I think it's interesting and fascinating that you have a leader that was on the democratic side of the Cold War,
mm-hmm.
but yet was sort of in conflict and resisted this kind of idea of joining a democratic bloc under the United States.
Yeah. One thing that struck me was the disagreement, I guess you could call it, over the U.S. military base at Subic Bay, which is a sort of really neat thing, but there's no, like, Civ doesn't have, here's a military base improvement or something like that. So it did find its way into one of the Diplo sayings. You want open borders so you can, like, make yourself at home at Subic Bay? I don't think so, or something like that, so...
Yeah, no, and that is an interesting concept that I haven't really thought of before in terms of, like, a modding idea is way back in the day you had the idea of, like, vassal states, you know, and, I mean, you could do that in Civ 5 if you had the right mod where you kind of vassaled other major civilizations. But there isn't, like, you're saying there's no way for me to build an encampment that pops out military units or an airport that I can base my units at or a naval base in your civilization because we're allies or because I'm more powerful than you, right?
Yeah.
Which would be an interesting idea, but I'm pretty sure there's no way to do it with the current state of... Probably have to change the DLL.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see. I think it would be a large sort of hurdle to get the AI to be able to use it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Closest thing you could probably do, but it doesn't necessarily make any sense, would be to have her strongly dislike military allegiances. But, you know, how does that work?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The other thing that I've been working on is I've been working on Rosetta some more because it is my pseudo-relaxing come home and just stare at Wikipedia and transcribe names. Rosetta is this child of mine, as I might describe it, that basically will rename cities to match, wherever possible, the language of the civ that owns that city. So if Spain conquers Tenochtitlan, it'll rename to Ciudad de Mexico. Whereas if France comes in later, it might rename to, I'm going to butcher this, it's probably like Ville de Mexique or something like that. So the main goal of it is to just add some immersion. And also, I think it rewards you a little bit for settling or conquering cities, because there's always that sort of little excitement of, is the city going to change? What's it going to change to? I recently scraped together enough knowledge of Hebrew. I had been in my like giant Excel file. I've been saving Hebrew names, but they're all in Hebrew. So, and I was kind of like, every so often I'd be like, I feel like I got this. I translate this. And then I'd start and I'd be like, oh, maybe not. I conferred with a couple friends of mine who speak Hebrew. And I was like, okay, I just got to make like a chart. And you're like, this letter is A, this letter is not A. And went through all, I think it was like about 1,500 Hebrew names I had stored up. And finally just got those all banged out.
This is still the most ridiculous mod of all time. You realize this.
Yeah, that's very fair.
How many megabytes of text is there now?
That's a good question. Let me see. So currently I have, in terms of just entries, about 55,000.
Yikes.
God.
And I think it's bad to have to write a diplomacy script.
That's very true.
I think as a modder, when somebody brings out something like the Rosetta Stone, it is both a blessing and a curse, because you're kind of thinking, yeah, it's brilliant, great idea. But then when people start saying, well, doesn't it have the Rosetta Stone? Isn't it compatible with that? You're thinking, oh my goodness, you know.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've been noticing.
So the work you've given us there isn't
right,
but, but at the same time, it's a really great concept, interesting concept.
Well, one thing I've been noticing, which is, I will definitely chalk it up to just a blessing, is that the more cities I add into the database, the more likely that when I add a new civ or try and build compatibility for a new civ, the greater the chances that some of those cities are already in there. So like, for example, when I was getting support for Palmyra, which is Merrick's Palmyra, I think I only had to add like 4 cities to the database because everything else was already in the database, which was nice. I recently started putting the cities in for JFD's Chile. I think because of the coverage from Mapuche and Spain, the colonial cities, I only had to add about 10, which was nice. And plus, it uses Spanish, so I don't have to do any more translations. It's great. So people should do more colonial civs. That way I don't have to add more languages.
Was that a jab in my direction?
Absolutely not.
When it starts doing things like the Wabanaki, that's going to be a whole new set of city names.
Some of the Native American civs have given me more interesting sort of, not quite challenges, but the exercise is a little more interesting. So usually it'll happen as I'll look up, you know, oh, here's Algiers or something. I go to the Wikipedia page for Algiers and I just kind of look what the other pages are called in other languages. But then you get to when I was doing Cree, and then when also I was doing Enigma's Iroquois and Navajo, they have some city names that are like Bead Hill or something like that. And it would be less flavorful if everybody was just like, oh, the Iroquois have their indigenous name for Bead Hill, and then everybody else gets Bead Hill, which is clearly an English word. So then I have to actually like go to Google Translate, figure out what the word for bead is and what the word for hill is, and figure out how to make that grammatical so it's not like hill bead or something like that, I guess. They're more work, but I feel like the payoff's a little bit better.
Doesn't Rosetta also include repurposing names for, like, if you conquer other cities, other civs?
Oh, yeah.
So how does that work if you say, you know, okay, if the Cree go and conquer England, what happens then?
London might have been one of the ones that had a Cree Wikipedia page because it's a big, important city.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
But for the rest of them, they probably don't. There's no way to reconstruct it. So they will use just the default name. So in this case, if they conquered London, it would stay London.
Right. Oh, okay.
I feel like I try and straddle the border of making it flavorful, but not trying to create names.
Right.
Obviously, the exception is for when I translate names like Bead Hill or something like that.
Right.
That's really the only exception I try and make, because that's otherwise it's a rabbit hole and it's so much more work.
Yeah. Okay. So this is much less of a ridiculous undertaking than I thought it was.
But. Yeah. But I do try and make sure that particularly for indigenous North American, South American sort of cities, that they at least have their own names for their own city, and then they'll have the sort of modern name as well.
Do you do anything like when you discover that certain parts of words or certain parts of city names mean something? Do you try and then use the, you know, say in this instance, the Cree's version of that? So, for example, the word Abba for Aberdeen means at the mouth of. So is there anything you would do to think, well, if the Cree were saying it was the mouth of the river such and such?
I generally don't. The only time that comes up, again, would be like the sort of the flipped side, where there's the indigenous Cree name, and then a lot of times the modern name is a sort of a calque, is a translation of it.
Yeah.
And so then that's where I sort of try and translate it, just because it sounds weird to have it be in English, but I don't generally do that, no.
Right.
Just because it's hard to know where to stop on that, I think.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. It's such a big undertaking.
Well, there's actually something I'm working on, sort of a new layer I'm adding on, although it's not going to cover all like 50,000 names. I'm gonna say that right now.
What?
So, let me back up for a second. The way that Rosetta works is that the city is stored in a database, which is what we call like a base name. And then each civ has what I call like a local name. So you found a city, finds your city name, tries to see if it's a base name or if it can be associated with a base name, and then looks to see if your civ has a local version of it. What this new layer does is says, well, I have found this base name and it shows up in this new database, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to switch the base name. So what this lets me do, and the best example is actually the one that got me thinking about doing this, is Carthage versus Tunis.
Right.
Because before, what would happen is that basically the only way to have Carthage be in your game as of right now, because I haven't pushed this last update in, would be is like that Carthage owns the Carthage city state. Basically, everyone else would change it to Tunis except for like Roman Greece. So what I've done now is that if you conquer Carthage as like France or something, it won't change to Tunis. It'll stay as Carthage, or if they, I think there's like an accent mark in the French version or something like that. Unless it gets conquered by what I currently have here is Arabia. I'll probably expand that to maybe add like the Seljuks, Civitas Seljuks or something like that. Any sort of Muslim power, it'll switch the base name from Carthage to Tunis. And then if France comes in and marches and takes that back, it'll use Tunis names. So in a way, it adds more work, but it also solves a lot of headaches that I had. I was like, oh, what name should I use? And so it's really mostly used from what I've got. I've got some of it coded and some of it's just kind of notes. It's mostly used for like the Middle East. So like Babylon will become Hilla or something like that, or Heliopolis to Cairo, Thebes to Luxor, that sort of stuff. But also I found some use for it in like India as well, for converting from some of like Chandragupta era cities into Gandhi era cities, which is kind of nice.
Right. You know, and another thing you could use it for is, although it would be more work for sure, as you well know, especially with there being a rash of either JFD or other people building, you know, communist Russia
mm-hmm.
civilizations, is the, you know, the stamping out of religious names and the replacement of them with mm-hmm. you know, communist party names, where you had the whole switch from St. Petersburg to Leningrad.
I just want to switch the conversation slightly, if I may, to the Berber. I understand you took the lead for them. You were with us the last time you were with us. You're talking about that civ, and it's a civ that I quite like. At the time, you were thinking maybe in the future you might do another leader for that. Is that something that you had any chance to think about yet, or not?
Yeah, we have plans for two or three, potentially two fleshed out plans, one less fleshed out plan for leaders for Berbers. One, I believe, was Massinissa. The other one is Caecilius. And then we had a third one, which is just kind of nebulous and just kind of there hanging in our memories, for Tin Hanan. For Casella, it was basically about having mobility and a focus on sort of improved combat ability when you're near allies. And then with Massinissa, it was a sort of, again, alliance focused, but food and cavalry focused as well. So he was going to get the Numidian cavalry UU. So that one, the only thing stopping us there, we're backed up on the art pipeline, basically. But we have the ideas down there. We have sort of a fleshed out thing. We're pretty sure it's codable, because that's always the hoop you have to jump through is, well, I like this idea, but can I actually make it work? We just got to actually get to work and set aside the time to do it.
Cool. The other civ that was playing was Armenia, which was done by Civitas, and they had something to do with it. Again, is that another civ that might see another leader at some point?
There's not any plans at the moment, and you know, anything's possible. Creating a leader is a lot easier than creating a full civ, so I would say I definitely wouldn't put a hard no on that. Yeah, I think if we came across a leader that seemed to be really interesting to one or more of us, I think that would be something that we'd be totally interested in doing. And it's just more about getting that inspiration for it.
Is there anything else in the background that you can tell us? Maybe some new civs or a new project that might come up?
There's one that Pachiel is sort of taking the lead on. I'm not sure if it's ready for announcement or anything, but there is something that's in the pipeline. I would say that he's a little bit of a perfectionist a little bit. So he really wants this sort of ability to be perfect because it's near and dear to his heart. So we're sort of refining. We've had a bunch of great ideas and then we try and implement them and we get 95% of the way there. And it turns out the system, the game just can't do what we want it to do. It won't handle those modifiers, right? And so we have to go back to the drawing board. We do have one there. And I think it's actually been a collaboration with Luigi for the artwork for that one.
Oh, excellent.
We do have some more Philippine alts in the pipeline as well. Just sort of, you know, one of it strikes the fancy. You're like, you know, it sounds nice. Another Philippines alt. Let's throw that one out. So we do have some, but it's just moving a little bit slowly. We do have more stuff, though, coming eventually.
Yeah. So, Stephen Cat, is there anything else that you're working on?
I'm working on sort of a project to, I like to think that it increases immersion a little bit more as well. But for great people, working title right now is called Magnum Opus. And basically, it's almost done. I'm in the testing stages because these great people are going to try and murder me with their finicky modifiers. But basically, just adding more diverse and more time frame appropriate great people to the list. Testing the sort of the base version of the mod, which was inspired by me realizing that some of the like eras for the like the great artists make no sense whatsoever. The main part of this first mod is to sort of rebalance what eras the great people are associated with, which generally means people slide back an era or two. And because of that, we can't have information era have no great people. So coming up with great people to fill in those blanks. And it's really been sort of like an adventure because it requires me working with like all these modifiers, but also working with the art to try and get great artists, great works to show up, and also messing with the sound database to get works of music to show up. So hopefully I'll be able to have that out in the next couple weeks, I think. I think it's really close. There's just one. This will be like a nice little preview. One of my great engineers, I think it's Gaudi, Antoni Gaudi, the Barcelonan architect, is just, his ability does not want to work, and it's really frustrating me. Everyone else seems to be cooperating, but he is going to be the death of me. So basically, once I get him sorted out, it's good to go, I think, basically. In terms of how many people it's adding, the space one is about 50 great people, just to fill in the spaces that were left by me moving other people forward in time. But then I have this massive list that I've been sort of, every time I just come across somebody who seems interesting in history, I just kind of jot their name down in this Google sheet I have. And my goal would be eventually to do, every month, put out another edition of great people. So I guess one might be December, it might be a bunch of female artists, or in February, it might be African-American people, or in June, it might be people from the Indian subcontinent or something like that. So I just think that it's a easy way to sort of increase the representativeness, to correct some sort of errors, perhaps, or weirdnesses on Firaxis's part, and just kind of inject some new flavor, new sort of abilities into the game. And it's a lot easier than adding a civ. But I think it's also more interesting because I get to think about a whole bunch of smaller, different things as opposed to one big thing. But it's also showed me some sort of weird limitations of the system as well, specifically the sound system, because to get the great musicians to play their wonderful music in the gallery screen, you have to edit the UI file like for that screen. So what that means is that without careful work, it won't be compatible with other mods that also modify that UI screen / any other mod that adds their own music, unless you put in the command to play like my music and other people's music. And so it would require this sort of like collaboration there, I think. Thankfully, there haven't been too many other mods that add great musicians, but it's something that I've had to take into account just planning ahead for future great people sort of packs. Unideal, I guess, is how I would describe it.
You have a workaround, but the workaround is...
it's to just manually add people's... yeah. So if somebody adds a new one, I have to go add it in. But I'm excited for this to come out eventually. It's been fun doing all the sort of research and just learning about sort of people that were new to me. I always think that research is one of the more fun parts of Civ modding.
Yeah.
What mod is one of your favorites out of the ones that you've not done?
That's a good question. I feel like I've subscribed to so many. That's hard to remember. But I was super excited to see that Perfect World is back, the map script. And I just remember for Civ 5, I was on a Mac at the time, so I had to be very careful and choose which mods I wanted to do, because I would have to like manually unpack them and stuff like that. But I remember Perfect World being the ones where like, yep, this is definitely worth it. Gonna go through all that work to get the nice maps. So I'm really glad to see that that's back for 6.
Record over episode 72 with Rob, RNXFT, Vice Virtuoso, Nirai, and Lee S.
In late of 2016, I was working on building a great athletes mod that added a new kind of great person to the game, one that was built by Entertainment Districts. Now, at the time, there was no fire tuner for Civ 6, and I realized late after designing all of the mods that testing a mod that only appears in the game by random chance, and there's no way to force it to appear in the game, especially for someone with the little amount of time that I have as a father of a 2-year-old, is that just doesn't work. You boot up the game, oh, can I possibly get it? I can't. It got bought by someone else. Now I don't know if it works. There was a random crash in that game. Maybe that was one of the modded guys, but I don't know that, etc. So I put that on the back burner, and then work got busy. I haven't picked it back up again, but I am actually planning to finish the mod now that I can actually, on an evening, open up the game, use Fire Turner to force that, give me that great person right away, fire it off, see what happens. And that's going to be a very different mod, I think, in terms of great people. The thing with athletes in history is, first off, it's a weird term that's actually connected directly to the Olympic Games in a lot of ways. But athletes, the position that they hold in society has changed over time. In ancient times, athletes were really military people who accomplished something out of the ordinary. And then over time, then those became often people who promoted certain activities. And then in modern times, you get this weird thing where maybe athletes are about money, or maybe athletes are about your cultural identity as citizens of a specific city against all other cities, right? So they start out in the mod being created by Entertainment Districts but connected to encampments as a war focus. And then in the modern era, they're more created by Entertainment Districts and used in neighborhoods to increase the popularity of the neighborhood or give the neighborhood a productivity bonus or something like that. There's a lot of very niche, vague names that no one will recognize, but also some very recognizable names that will be available as another kind of great person.
I feel it should be a big tourism bonus on this.
Well, depending on who they are, right? And right now, actually, they have a lot of really random bonuses. Some give you faith from archers. Some give you faith bonuses from your entertainment districts. And you go, well, are these all faith? No, some of them are going to give you culture and faith generation of two neighborhoods if you're not at war. Then you have the Eureka bonus for future tech, which will, of course, give you ridiculous amounts of points in the end game if all you're doing is building future tech over and over and over again. And bonuses to productivity for entertainment districts for each adjacent coastal water tile, 3 Eureka bursts at random technologies, modern era or later. And then I think my favorite one is you use them on an encampment, and all units that are trained from that encampment can move over snow tiles, regardless of whether they are hills or mountains, without paying extra costs. The nice thing about this would be, once the mod is out, I do plan to occasionally add more. People have pointed out, for example, that I have no soccer players, no football players, if you're in England, in the list, which is a colossal oversight.
It's kind of a no-win situation.
It is.
Recorded for episode 73 with Rob, RA8XFT, Vice Virtuoso, Nirai, Lee S, and Sucratech.
Some units that have been created for Civ 6. There's one guy who has just brought out the Japanese one, so it was Tree, or Last Try, who's brought out a Japanese set of units. So these units cover the ancient and medieval units. They replace most of the units that are there. And I have to say that the actual models look great. Absolutely, really well done. The one thing, though, which sort of puts a bit of a dent on unit modelling, I would say, is that even when it's compressed, it's something like 364 meg for just a few units. So it's pretty intensive on memory. I don't know how you found your modeling to prove.
I know for a certain, like, Ramkam Hang is essentially the size of a DLC.
Yes.
It's like, I think it's in addition to, like, the custom models, it also has soundtrack and all that. So it is the actual size of a DLC. But Mr. Healy is 63 megabytes. It's one unit model and one building model and textures.
Oh, that's not bad. That's okay.
Is that compressed or uncompressed?
That's uncompressed.
That's even better. That's not bad at all then. Because I know that the four units that Deliverator brought out for the Persia Macedonia, that was a similar sort of size to that. And that was for four units. That was after compression as well.
There's also the trick that you can delete the texture files out of the folder once you've built the mod and then upload it, because it's all contained within the platforms folder. Is that after doing that as well?
Oh, that's a good question.
I don't include most of my textures. I include big ones just so people can use them if they want. Other than that, the numbers I gave are without textures.
I did notice that the textures weren't there. I just saw.
I sort of suspect that the thing with that unit pack may be that the models are unique.
I think the models are unique, yeah. They are, yeah.
That would increase the file size because you need models, you need textures, and that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's right. But just actually, sorry to interrupt you, just based on what Bias was saying there, that does include textures in it, and textures are about 2/3 of the size of that mod. So that's probably where the problem lies there with that being stood.
Theoretically, you can reuse a lot of what exists in the game. So I imagine like the peasant probably could have, the worker really could have been done using models that were already in the game.
Yes, yeah, as Deliverator has done.
Yeah, but if he's ported over completely different models and textures, then that will definitely be much bigger.
Yeah, so the other thing that I saw with units was that unit upgrades, the weapons would upgrade for the same model. So rather than getting a brand new model, the existing model would maybe change the weapon, or they'd get something else that would be added, and they were doing it that way. Handyvac, and it is on Steam as well, mix and match units. So instead of unlocking specific units researching techs, unlock the chassis and weapon types. The units you can build are a combination of the best chassis and best weapon available to you. And the idea is to have side grades of similar leveled units in each era, and for different players to end up with different ones depending on the order in which they research tech and on which strategic resources they have access to. And resources gate whether or not you can build some of the weapons or chassis. You can always, as well with that, still build the previous unit. You know, like come across a problem where if you were building warriors and then, you know, you discover ironworking until you've got access to iron, you can't build something. And that sort of negates that as well.
Recorded for episode 78 with Rob, RNXFT, Nirai, and Vice Virtuoso.
There's also Armenia that's come out by Civitas. It does look nice. I guess when we go back to Civ 5, I really like the JFD Armenia.
Yep.
But that's already been done with Congo. So it's almost like, crikey, something that really suited them has already been taken by a main Civ. So they seem to be very strong military Civ, particularly on hills and mountains, with cities with extra range strength and defense strength. So it seems like you can build a very strong defensive city and sort of sit in with them quite well, especially if you're sort of in hills, mountains.
Currently playing in a game with Malaysia.
Okay. So what's your experience with that one?
So far, we haven't had a lot of contact because they're on a different continent than me, but they do seem to be actually quite powerful. I don't know which of the two leaders. I don't remember which of the two leaders I'm playing. I think it is Iskandar.
Okay.
But they seem to be on a continent with two aggressive civilizations that are actually fighting them, and they seem to be doing the winning.
Okay.
Water and trade-oriented. But their opponent, essentially, the thing that happens where you're all on an island and the AI decides, hey, my armed forces can win this battle, while neglecting to think about the fact that their capital and all of their major cities are on the shore and they don't have a good navy and Malaysia does. But that's my assumption, because I kind of came into and met these guys when they're in the middle of the fight. We're like late classical era at this point. No, late medieval era. So about halfway through the game. And I'm assuming that based on Malaysia being, you know, not a super aggressive team, that's what's kind of happened. But I'm a little bit nervous because their navies are currently decimating the two aggressor civilizations. And then if they are actually a warmonger, the next logical place for them to send that navy is to my also shore-based nation. So, but so far, we actually have a pretty good relationship.
They have a unique brew, the Rumma. Two culture and one housing, and receives one food for each plantation, and one culture for each every two adjacent river tiles or Rumba improvements.
Right. I mean, I love this. This is the thing that I was mentioning before with Civilization VI is all about the map location. Love the fact that the basis here is go get yourself a place and then put a cluster of as many Rumas as you can fit close to each other. Although they are limited to marshes and flatland. So find yourself a flat plain, build a city next to there, and then build yourself a clump of Rumas.
Yeah. And then think about which one to destroy when you need to build a vital building.
I hate those decisions.
Yeah. When I started playing Civ 6, I didn't realize I was going to have to make those decisions. A bit of a shock when I think, no, I need to actually not have that, because I need that to have that building or that place there. So Malaysia, another winner, and the artwork, by the way, on all of these is absolutely immense. Absolutely superb artwork, isn't it?
Yes.
So they're not the only two to do the new civs. There's been a bit of action from Merrick of late.
Yep.
Done a few, haven't they? Kievan Rus, Hungary, Norwegian leaders Olaf and Sigurd.
Yeah, as well as Venice. One of the other things on the list of topics that we had was Supertax great work screen. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is a great time or a bad time to segue into it, because we were just talking about having to override the great work screen, and now, ironically, a mod that now directly conflicts with the idea of overriding the great work
screen.
Go for it.
Sucrit has built kind of a mod to get rid of scrolling on the great work screen. At least until you're adding a modded great people like, say, JFD's theologians that come with the Rule with Faith mod, which is a great idea, by the way, that it puts all the information on one screen. It kind of looks kind of like the government screen. So you end up with kind of 9 horizontal blocks, each of one which corresponds to one kind of great person type. And then what happens is you see all of the information about that great person in just a little block. The UI is really nice. It's kind of a blue on white background. And all the information that's previously, you know, scattered across a large amount of space is now just very elegantly positioned in one of these kind of blocks. So, and it's kind of one of these things where it's almost like a no-brainer, in my opinion, that it looks that way. It does expand, like I said, to add more things. I think he is kind of looking at retrofitting a lot of the different screens.
Yeah.
For the UI, and that'll be interesting going forward, so...
I do also like that it's a lot brighter. It doesn't have that sort of faux wood paneling. It's a lot brighter. It's a lot easier to read the original one.
Isn't it?
I do really enjoy, because I don't think they're on the base ones, where the use of the counters from like the victory pullout tab, instead of using the bars, they use the icons that will fill up with progress. I think that's a lot more intuitive than the system on the other page, where it was like a bar that would fill up across to see what civs were close to getting the great person.
On that note, he only shows the top 3 civilizations at any one given time that are in the running. As a first glance, what you have is in the bottom left corner of each of the column cards for each great person, you have a circular kind of orb with the icon of whatever civilization it is, and it is grayscale. And then as that civilization gets closer to winning, it starts coloring in, kind of like the idea that I came in, you know, that comes to my mind is like the health globes in Diablo, right? but what he does do is if you mouse over any of the globes, then you get a flyout that shows you every civilization, how many points they're putting towards this great person, and it shows you the bar that you're kind of familiar with. So you only see the 3 most relevant, but you can dig in and see how fast are they filling up, how close are they to winning the great person, etc. So I think it's a great little compact system.
This screen also makes me realize how much I dislike Firaxis's auto caps feature, where like you can see, if you look at the screen that's on the Steam page, for example, he's got a great general Sun Tzu, but only the first G and great is like bigger than the other ones. And I'm just like, Firaxis, can you not every, like the first letter of each word be capitalized, like bigger than the other ones?
Yeah, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
I recently was trying to see if I could disable that on like the city banners just to see what it looked like. And it like totally changed the font style and it looked terrible. And I was like, okay, we'll keep that then. Yeah. We won't mess with that. I was like, this was a mistake. This is a cursed image right here.
But what I've been trying to do is actually build kind of a reversed island plates. So right now in the game, you can have island plates. You can have Pangaea, which is the single continent in the middle of the map, as you know. You can also have this thing called Inland Sea, which is, and I mean, I'm sure you've all played it because there's only like 8 different kinds of maps where everything is land by default. And you kind of have a reverse Pangaea in the middle where it's a big lake. And what I've been trying to actually do is kind of take the Inland Sea idea and apply it to the island map so that what we actually get is a land map where the default is land, but there are several large oceans in the land that kind of connect things up. Because one of the things that I realized is that the relative balance of land to sea gameplay in the game really changes based on what kind of a map you're on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in a Pangaea, you can only conquer coast with a navy and only if you're on the coast. So land then becomes much more powerful, right? If you're playing like an island or an archipelago map or even a fractal map, navy is often the supreme way. Battleships win everything. Aircraft is not really all that necessary because you can just shell everything, right?
Yeah, battleships for the win.
You know, an inland sea, I was kind of hoping that if I could do a multiple inland seas map, that you could actually kind of make it so that there's maybe a better balance between navy and... Because you can get somewhere with navy, that maybe somewhere significant with navy, but you can't just build a navy and win. I was hoping to get something where, like, aircraft was useful. What I noticed, though, and this might be really interesting if anyone's interested in doing map scripts that's listening, is the map API for the Lua coding has not significantly changed since Civilization V.
Hmm.
So what that means is many of the functions are still documented in the old Civilization V modding wiki. Many of those still count. Like, a lot of the functions are the same, and what they do are the same, so the documentation for what arguments you can use and documentation that says, hey, we believe that this is what this thing is doing, is still the same. Maybe some of the behaviors have changed, but not significantly. So for anyone who is interested in doing map scripting, especially if you knew how to do it in Civ 5, you should still be able to do it, or there should be resources available for you to learn what all the different functions do and when to use them and what Firaxis uses them for. They seem to be pretty much the same. That's been my experience so far. I think maybe like the philosophy behind them has changed, so I don't think that means that we should all go back and find our Civ 5 mods and upload, you know, and then just make whatever tweaks from things that are broken. I think you'd still find then that there isn't enough room to build cities.
Yeah.
For instance, the map isn't ready yet. It has a kind of a bad habit of when I render it, and I think there's something wrong with kind of my loop, the methodology that I thought I could use. When it puts in the lakes, it ends up obliterating all the other lakes. So on huge maps, you usually end up with one really awesome lake in the top left corner. Nothing else anywhere else. And it turns out that rivers don't actually run very far away from water, so you'll end up with this one kind of little paradise corner, and everything else will be flatland.
Interesting.
But I did want to actually point out something as well that I thought was interesting, is that on Steam right now, in addition to Perfect World, which everyone is definitely flocking to for good reason, I noticed there's a lot of kind of the symmetrical snowflake maps that are popping up. Like, there's a good, in the last month or two, there's a good, I would say, dozen mods of various different kinds of symmetrical maps. And, of course, that's interesting because those maps are used for competitive multiplayer play.
And it's also interesting that they seem to be by different people.
Right.
Like, I'm seeing 4 different maps, and they are 4 different authors.
Yeah, that is, to me, like a little fascinating thing. And maybe I'm just in a little bubble where I don't realize that this is a thing, but it just kind of appears that there is a growing drive towards competitive Civ 6 multiplayer with mods.
one of the games that I played recently was with Chrissy 15 Suma Rework and his new leader for that, along with Gedemo's City States as well, with the rework of Suma. So the Ziggurat is actually now a district. That district receives two faith when placed on river instead of the usual faith from the forests, but it also generates a lot of science. So it generates science equal to the faith adjacency bonuses and the specialist yield to science and generate two great scientist points. So what I've found with that is that it's become a bit like Korea if you've got the science buildings in as well, in that it becomes really a powerhouse for science more than anything else. And with the Namu as alt leader, very nicely done. He has holy sites and the buildings benefit from policy cards which increase wonder production. So sometimes if you choose a policy card which increases wonder production, then you get like a quick one-off bonus. And then also if you're constructing a holy site building or a wonder, it allows for a policy or government change during that turn and unlocks a policy card from an unknown civic. So it kind of makes it quite powerful, really, the Sumeria. And I haven't completed a game yet with them, but it's looking like a good sort of science, steady science div that also generates a fair amount of faith. I do like the fact that the Ziggurat's now a district rather than a random improvement. I think that's a good move. You know, with that, as mentioned, I've been playing with some of Gedemo's city-states, which are pretty interesting, particularly, of course, the older ones, by which I mean historically older ones, not ones he did ages ago. There's a fair few that he brought out. He's done a really good job of them. Like, for example, Pompeii, he's done, has an effect on unused antiquity sites. Very nicely done, and absolutely the right trait for Pompeii, I think, which is it yields 3 gold and 3 culture if the antiquity sites isn't removed. I tend to remove them. But he's done a lot of different effects for them. I think City of the Caesars is probably my favourite, with +2 amenities if you've got an aqueduct in the city. So that's kind of nice. He's done overall a good job. I'm really glad that somebody's taken on quite a few city-states. It's nice to see that people are doing those as well as civilizations, because it does make it nicely random. It does give some nice different effects. And of course, when you're doing a bigger mod like my own, you know, I've got a fair few ideas, but I haven't got them all. Nice to have other people's input in that as well. So yeah, big thumbs up for those.
Yeah, and I also like with Gedemo City States, I like that he's done like sort of the historical ones, but then he's also sort of noticed he's moved into sort of the more mythological or legendary kind of city states, which is kind of a neat thing with City of the Caesars, with Kavira, with Camelot, you know, shake things up a little bit.
I mean, he's also doing Arkane as well, which is the Russian Stonehenge or whatever, which I wasn't aware of. But that's a nice little science one, which each level of walls provides +2 science in its cities. Oh. So imagine linking that up with the Suma rework, and you've really got a scientific powerhouse going, potentially. About 32 altogether by the looks of things. So that's quite a comprehensive load and well worth having a look at.
JFD in the last month has dropped 15 mods, either updated or brand new, onto Steam Workshop. So that's one every 2 days, roughly speaking.
So what's your point? That's just like JFD standard operating procedure, isn't it?
I think we are, can go back to starting to wonder whether or not he's a robot. But clearly, like, for a modcast, 15 different mods is too much to talk about them all.
Yeah.
And in the defense of anybody, a lot of these are alternative leader mods. Not to say that that reduces them, but it does reduce the amount of roboticness you need in order to put them out. So maybe he is human, but he also released Chili.
Olympias, I think, is a new one.
Yes.
Right.
For Macedon. Very nice art, and also really nice to see that there's a religious focus as well with the Macedon one, for those players that like to form the religion as well, whilst playing a civilization which will just go across the board and wipe everybody else out.
Right, yeah, it's just to kind of say, tell what she does. She is still warlike. Not like that JFD's recast Macedon as very different kind of playstyle, but she's a city-state kind of monger. She gets envoys when she founds a pantheon, so you get one right out of the gate, and then when she signs to the city-states, she'll get general points, and she'll get great profit points.
The thing about that is that when I've seen Alexander go, he really goes and wants to wipe the map in the games that I've played. So these city-states seem to get wiped out fairly early on. And perhaps with her, she will keep them because there's a reason for having city-states around.
Right. So she keeps them around, whereas he wipes them out. Sorry, I may have misspoke when I said she was a city-state monger, because that makes it sound like she wants to wipe them all out. She's quite the opposite.
No, I understood what you meant.
Right, city-state-oriented. She wants to have all the city-states, and she gets profit and great general points for those. And then a nice touch is that if they're military city-states, she'll get double the general points, and if they're religious, she'll get double the profit points.
So if I'm playing as Macedon, which I don't do very often because I'm a builder rather than a warmonger, but that just at least gives me something that's part of my gameplay, which is to get the religion in and go from there.
Right. And of course, if you're playing Rule with Faith, which you should be, it's not just that she gets profit points at the beginning of the game, so you can send some envoys over to a religious city-state to get your religion faster, which, I mean, it would be a valid gameplay by itself. But, of course, then you'll also have great theologians, which run off of profit points as well. So you would then get great theologian points for the rest of the game if you do the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which would be good for, potentially, kind of a religious building state. I like to have a religion when I'm building. Not that it's necessarily good for making me build more wonders and going tall, but it's just kind of nice to have more cool things to build, I guess.
I think it's also going back to the idea of that this is like one every 2 days. Just the ability to put out that much art, I think, is something that should be highlighted.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, because it's not currently credited that way, whether JFD has been doing the art himself or if...
I guess it is him.
It is him. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So now we know he can do more things than we thought. And then I think this other one, which is kind of really a fascinating concept, and it's really amusing. I mean, I think it was released as a joke to a certain extent, but he released very recently Christian 10 of Iceland and Christian 10 of Denmark. And if you look carefully in Steam, you'll notice that they have the same leader.
Yeah, it's the same guy, yeah.
So it actually is, I think, the first time you've seen a leader that crosses between two civilizations. Iceland, so Sukratak's Iceland, with a modern Christian 10, and his name is spelt kind of as if it was Iceland. Now, I don't know, and I'm looking now, whether they have the same powers as a leader.
Yeah, they do.
The fun thing, of course, there is that you have the same power in two places. You have the same agenda in two places. They add a special project. And then underneath that, you have whatever is the base of the civilization. Of course, these both being modded civilizations, it may be a little bit tougher to compare the two, but I'm going to try just to kind of see how that goes.
You can also play against yourself, theoretically.
You could theoretically play against yourself, yes. I don't know if there's anything that prevents you from playing the same leader, especially when they have different names. I'm assuming that under the hood they are two totally different files.
Yeah, right? I don't think the code will allow for it otherwise, yeah.
So his abilities, specifically, are that when you train a unit and it's in a city that has full loyalty, then it will ignore zone of control and move faster in your own territory.
Civilian units, so it's like workers and settlers and stuff.
That's interesting. So they can run past enemy units. Maybe lets you get away from trouble. But during war, then, you can also build a special project, but only during war, which gives you additional amenities and culture, and then a burst of loyalty. Okay, I see where this is going. This is interesting. What that lets you do, specifically, is going to be knock cities of your own that have been captured by other players back into free cities very quickly and then recapture them for yourself. That's really interesting. But only when you're at war.
Yeah.
It can also maybe give you a hard counter when you're playing up against the Mapuche. Keep building this project over and over again.
That historic rivalry, Denmark/Iceland and the Mapuche.
That's right. Just to
natural enemies.
keep the historicity in CAC. But then you're doing this on top of Iceland and on top of Denmark.
Yeah.
And where that, I think, becomes interesting, first of all, Iceland actually has a unique civilian unit, the Lawspeaker.
Mm-hmm.
This actually means that the Christian's trait applies to them. So again, they move faster in your own territory. Now, they're supposed to sort of be garrisoned in a city or garrisoned in districts. But this lets you kind of, in time of war, leave those in maybe more vulnerable positions for longer and then run like hell. I think that's the idea there.
Yeah.
Looking at the Danish team, they have a loyalty bonus for cities on access to coast. When they're claiming tiles, they get more loyalty. So this lets you maybe unlock that ability better, where you have the loyal and faster units. I'm not sure necessarily how beneficial fast-moving civilian units are. So not medics and stuff like that, right? So it's mostly still going to be workers, settlers, certainly.
Pretty useful early game workers when you rush to try and get the things built so you can get the Eurekas.
Right. Bearing in mind, of course, that at the beginning of the game, unless you're really aggressive with forward settling, probably for the first two or three eras, maximum loyalty is pretty much guaranteed.
Yeah.
Actually, where this would be really useful, since it gives you extra movement, not so much the zone of control, but the movement thing. When you're playing the early game, and let's say you're settling out a continent, you can, say, get Magnus and stick him in your, you know, the governor, and put him in your capital, and set him so that he gives you no cost of settling in terms of population. And then you can spam settlers out of there like mad. And as long as they basically are moving through an unbroken chain of your territory, they will have a movement speed bonus.
Yeah. There's always that, you know, you move one tile and you want to move another tile, but all the other tiles are like hills or forests or anything. So it would let you sort of circumvent that a little bit within your territory.
Yeah. The other thing to comment here, though, and I think maybe as a criticism, is I would like to see in the future if this becomes more of a trend, right? It's a new trend set, I would say, leaders that are in two places at once. Somebody needs to make a, like, William the Orange, where you play as William in Holland and you play as William in England. But I would really like to see where the leader has some way of tying in. I mean, granted, this does happen, where there is kind of a loyalty bonus in Denmark and there's a civilian unit bonus in Iceland. But something maybe a little stronger where you say, whoa, this leader changes significantly without changing anything about them. Make them the same, just like he did. But where if, say, you have somebody who's a leader of, say, Holland and England, they apply very differently in both situations in terms of what the sum of the parts is. I don't feel like you would feel very different playing Christian 10 in Denmark than you would in Iceland, but maybe that's the point.
Yeah.
Maybe the point is that he feels very different than playing Christian 9 in Denmark. It's a fascinating experiment, and I wonder how many other players, other modders, are going to start taking up that idea.
You could have them as, you know, King of Aragon or King of this one and King of that one or King of Unified Spain. And, you know, Spain especially is a good case of that. One leader could be the leader of multiple different civs depending on whether you're splitting Spain or whether you're doing Spain as a civ.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to do it in a sense in reverse, so that if, for example, we've got Pericles and we've got Gorgo as the two Greek leaders and the group two possibilities for Greece. So they've got their leader abilities and they play them out as Greece. But if there was such a thing as a civil war that I've always wanted to get into Civ 6, and all of a sudden it was split between two, and you say, right, well, we've got two leaders that's possible, so we're going to actually split them up, but now they're going to be Athens and Sparta. So it'd be nice if they could retain their leader abilities, but under Athens and under Sparta have two completely different civ abilities, and maybe even different unit buildings.
I actually like the idea. The first part of my brain goes, who is going to have the time to build all of the the additional powers for all the split civs? But I do think that you have something there where, rather than having two Greek unique abilities, two Greeks playing, and the only difference is the leader, if you knew that you could cause civil war to break out in your own civilization in order to change the powers of your civilization, I think that adds a gameplay element of saying, okay, on the one hand, if I fall into a civil war, maybe then I'm going to lose Greece's ability and I don't like that. And that would become an interesting gameplay. I want to avoid suddenly becoming a totally philosophy-based civilization. I want to stay being a sort of a great person-involved civilization, and I want to keep my unique units. Or you have the flip side where you say, okay, it was really good for me to start as Greece, but what I really want to be is Sparta now, right? So I'm playing Gorgo, I'm in Greece, I need to spawn Pericles, and I need to get the Spartan ability because kicking Persians down wells is the best gameplay. And so I want to build a well that I can kick Persians down, but I can't do that unless I have a civil war. That would at least give you kind of this additional element, I think.
Okay.
It would be very interesting to see how people did that, because then you actually get this kind of evolvasive concept, not just split. Of course, there would be a risk with that, but maybe the reward would be good enough.
You know, you could kind of mimic a UA by a wonder or a project that you could only get via an LUA script. You could build an interface that says, do you want to be Athens or do you want to be Sparta? And then the answer to that plops a building into your capital. And the building is actually acts like a world wonder, but it has a whole bunch of modifiers attached to it that allow you to do stuff.
Right. And actually, just to bring this up, as I was doing research for this modcast, just kind of randomly I stumbled across a mod that was called Pick a Second Leader. So it was a Chinese mod, by which I mean like the author was Chinese. So there was some sort of like issues with me being able to understand their command of English, and I couldn't read their UI because it was all in Chinese stuff, and I don't read Chinese.
What is it, Mandarin or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah, or Cantonese. Well, it was the script, so it's not Mandarin yeah. or Cantonese, I guess. But I don't know if it was traditional or simplified, but I couldn't read it. But what it basically purported to do was that when you got to a certain point in the game, I believe it was when you built your government plaza building, it would pop up a UI. And it would let you choose another leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that was a leader in the game or if that was a leader in a list of leaders based on who you were or whatever it was. But you would choose that leader and then it would give you a project that took one turn and one production. Or it was a building that took one production or something like that. And you would then get, for the rest of the game, that second leader's ability on top of your own.
Yeah, basically that's what they're doing. It's got to be what they're doing. Is they're using a project or a building to mimic a leader effect.
So there you go. It wouldn't actually be that difficult to do that, where you say, okay, I'm going to choose a different civilization and build this little building and get that civilization's powers. In addition to your own part, is a little bit more difficult because turning off modifiers. But I mean, if you were going to go through the trouble of actually building a mod where you could split off another civilization, that's already a large enough undertaking and would probably need a team of good content developers to pull off. So at that point, you could actually have modified the game so that all of the Firaxis unique abilities and everyone else's unique abilities had a kill switch where all the modifiers said, except if I have one of these buildings, right?
Yeah, if I was going to do it, I would delete the UAs from the leaders.
Right.
And then I would, if you're say, starting as Isabella of Spain, or Gorgola, Greece, I would place Gorgo's usual ability into essentially a world wonder, plop that world wonder into Gorgo's capital, and hope that capital never gets conquered, of course. And then that would create Gorgo's normal ability, and then when you want to switch to being specifically Sparta, for example, you take the original one out and add the new one.
Right.
And that way you could dynamically adjust the UAs and eliminate the original one, but then you would have to make sure all the modifiers that are attached to everything are not permanent.
Right.
I know that we've got JFD's mod with the religion rule with faith. For me, faith again, like Civ 5, has become kind of something where it's useful to get your religion and then, okay, you're just using the points to kind of get missionaries to spread religion and others to inquisitors to make sure it isn't spread to you too much. And it'd be nice for it to be more dynamic and be more useful in the game. It'd be nice to have some sort of mod whereby if you have got your pantheon, and you're saving up for your religion, you could gamble at that point and say, right, well, I've got enough now to get a great profit, but what I'm going to do first is have another pantheon. You go for another pantheon, or an enhanced pantheon or whatever, then you've got the possibility of having a better religion overall, but you run the risk of losing out on getting a religion and just sticking with two pantheons.
That's interesting. That way you could actually have like a pantheon that was like a pantheon?
Yeah.
Where you worship multiple gods?
Yeah, yeah.
But then maybe your people get more obsessed with mapping out all the possible gods rather than evangelizing world-conquering religion.
Because, I mean, I know that you'd run out of pantheons, but there's so many modded pantheons out there, and so, you know, it's the opportunity to mod more. So you could create more pantheons just to ensure that there was sufficient.
Right, and I think that you would have a balance point, too, where you would actually decide, okay, now that people can build more pantheons, there is already this sort of arbitrary thing where if you run out of profits, then religions run out. But you could also have a thing where if you run out of pantheons, although you'd probably want some more, like you said, but if you run out of pantheons, well then tough, nobody can have a pantheon.
Yeah.
right? You'd have to make it so that the game doesn't die because somebody gets told to pick a Pantheon and there are none, but...
Yeah, that would be the problem, is probably it would go directly to desktop.
Yeah, wouldn't need to if, for example, it was just, you got your first Pantheon, and then the next choice you have is, do I use this first prophet to create my religion, or do I use them to have a second Pantheon? So you just need to have potentially double the amount of Pantheons that you had before, which it is possible, and then that's it. But I know what you're saying. What you're thinking is, what if that could then go on and I could actually create my religion? Rather than having it as a set religion with those things, I could have a number of pantheons, which is a different approach, isn't it?
Right. On that note, especially if you made it cost more, let's actually take this, because this is a really interesting idea. What if you could keep building pantheons, and if you, as long as you didn't have a prophet, or you didn't use a prophet, okay, you could just keep going with pantheons with two problems. You can't missionary out pantheons. So, like, you can't spread pantheons except through settling trade and your own people the way that they do right now, right? Pantheons don't spread very far. They do spread. But there's no way to win a religious victory with them.
Yeah.
And then at some point that you would keep, like you said, having this choice between, do I go after get prophets or do I get another pantheon? Prophet, pantheon. I don't think you would use prophets to get pantheons. I think there would be this thing where it would be like, do you want this prophet? If you pass, you get another pantheon kind of deal, right? Or something where you have an increasing cost towards your next pantheon. But you could maybe get like a 5-6 pantheon thing if you were that crazy. But then you would have this problem of, how do I protect my pantheons from religions that are going to come along and eventually... overtake them.
Yeah, you get spammed by whomever's got Mahabadabi Palace and a couple of those wonders, and they just come over and spam away your pantheon.
Right. If you went with, I follow many different gods, but I didn't codify a religion as per se. First of all, you would get really fantastic bonuses. We understand this, right? You would be overpowered, except that then you would actually have to become antagonistic to all missionarying religions, because as soon as they spread to you, you're done.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to lose those buildings. Just on the idea, Rob, that is a fantastic idea. It would let you even kind of maybe more immersion again, in the sense that maybe you could play as like an aboriginal religion or something, that missionaries are coming and you don't want them for specific gameplay reasons.
So the thought that I was having as you were talking there was, maybe we could turn religion round. And I'm thinking again, kind of Anno Domini, I'm afraid here, because... Mm-hmm. Really, in that time frame, religions, per se, didn't really get going until towards the end of the region, did it? You know, I mean, they were there,
right?
But you wouldn't have religions en masse taken over until, you know, Buddhism came along. So my thought was, is there some way then we could turn religion on your head? So certain either civics or texts open up the possibilities for more either pantheons and features of religion. So you kind of build up the components of your religion first, and then there's the possibility to call that a religion. So if I were going along, I'm then playing along. If I think, right, okay, I can't really take over any other civilization's religion until I've created a religion of my own, do I pop out a religion sort of mid-game that probably isn't as fleshed out as it could be, but in order to try and get it out there? Or do I build it up more steadily and maybe late game have a very powerful religion that then I can say that is now going to be called a religion? Let's say this civilization has a set of beliefs. You know, a bit later on it can build a particular religious building, potentially. It could have more powerful beliefs. But we can choose what time we then say, right, okay, we're going to stop developing this and actually call it now. And it will be our religion. It's going to be called Buddhism.
Right. So, I mean, an analogy I would say here, too, is in the game right now, you have governor titles. And you also have technologies and civics associated with religion, especially if you're playing with Rule with Faith. But really, actually, in the base game, religion is a technology thing. But what you're kind of actually saying is, what if, in addition to having the tech tree, you almost had like a civic unlock, maybe, that then popped out, hey, you can get add another belief to your religion if your religion hasn't been codified into a religion yet, because this is the Anno Domini, right?
So I'm not quite saying that. You're nearly there. What I'm saying is that, let's say, the components that say that they can have a special building, maybe those components aren't available until a certain part in the game. components that have certain other advantages that might be stronger than the others aren't available until later on in the game.
Right.
So you start off, you have your pantheon, everything sort of a pantheon or a component of your religion, and initially you can only get basic things like plus one faith on stone or whatever. But if you keep going, you could even turn that into your religion if you really wanted, but it'd be a bit of a crap religion.
Right.
Let's say you have the choice of creating your religion once it gets to the point where you're allowed to. So at that point, it may be that you can have a special building. It might not be. So you have to then choose, do I build my religion now and have like a very basic religion, or do I wait until a bit later? And of course, civilizations or people who the missionaries go out to, perhaps the more components the religion has, the more attractive it might be to another civilization. So it's a case of, do I get out there and be a bit of a Buddhism that gets very out there early on, or am I an Islam that waits for a while and creates a few culture and then goes out there?
So you're almost saying, if I'm hearing you right, where we have some sort of concept where, let's say, just for sake of argument, even though it probably wouldn't work this way, that everyone started with a prophet or the ability to do a project that creates a religion. Probably a project would be better than a great person prophet that you have to get. But everybody could build this project and it'll give you a religion. But you still have the idea that there are, say, three aspects of a religion, that you get the three powers of the religion. But if you haven't gone enough down the civic tree or the tech tree or a little bit of both, you have a lot less options available to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't choose things that you haven't researched yet, and simultaneously, the things farther down on the tech tree are better, right?
Yeah.
So then if somebody says, you know what, I'm going to take sun worship, which gives me faith for farms, faith in each city that has at least one farm, that's it, one faith, one farm, sun worship, and drawing on rocks. And I'm going to take those as my two religious things. I'm not even going to have a third one because it wasn't unlocked yet. And I'm going to build a civilization and I'm going to try to get a head start on everyone else who's going to have a religion. So we're going to spread sun rocks to everyone. Meanwhile, somebody else takes two more eras, three more eras, comes out with a nicely fleshed out Buddhism. Theirs is more powerful. Theirs spreads better, so on and so forth. That would be kind of like what you're talking about, where you have, there's like a kind of a head startism, and maybe you actually wait until you play the long game and you wait till one of the very late eras and you pop out a highly optimized religion.
Yeah.
And you're going to try to still get a religious victory, which may look a little bit different than in just instilling enough people with your religion.
But the thought that I had there was that you could have your prophets only giving so much religious fervor. So if it's just like beating rocks, then maybe instead of 200 faith that it gives, it might only give about 20.
Right.
So it would take a ton of prophets to get anywhere near one city converting to that religion, because the religion is just considered to be crap.
Right.
But as the religion gets better, the spread becomes more likely, and when you get the super religions at the end, then they're going to be, you know, anybody that's still worshipping sun rocks is going to turn around and say, hey, that is just so much better.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
A thank you to lead patron Candace Albinus and all other supporters of the show through this measure. For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Calling today, in North America the number is 301-637-7659. In Europe, 44121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I'm personally of the opinion that if I had a vision for a Civ and then for Axis made the Civ, it's not generally worth reworking that Civ, just because it adds to the confusion about what the mod does, and you're not sure across versions what that Civ's ability is going to be. So I think if there's something I really liked about the Civ that I had designed, I would try and figure out how to make it work with the leader, I think is how I would do it.
Thanks for coming today, everyone. Thanks for listening in. This has been Modcast 80. Signing off today, this is me, Rob, R8XFT, and with me were...
Lee S.
Nurai the Forgiven.
And Ceiling Cat.
Thanks ever so much, everyone. Goodbye. Then, Dan, you've got that at least. So what are we going to talk about first, guys?
excuse me.
Lee having a cold.
yeah.
Try to make you go jump through some really outrageous hoops.
You know, I do like the occasional hoop jumping. If you're listening, Fireaxis, I volunteer to do some city names for you if you want. Just outsource it.
I just realized that it's difficult to talk about UI mods when you don't have pictures.
Very fair.
And then I guess the other thing that I was going to talk about too, which is... Thankfully.
Sorry, it's just one of those days.
It's one of those days. Well, I'm glad to hear you're starting to feel better. Your sense of humor is still coming. is intact. And, of course, no, I was looking at the wrong thing. So, skip that.
Well, I think her problem was that she was fundamentally a religious issue, and she wanted to take England back into the fold of Catholicism, and that just simply wasn't ever going to happen after the Reformation and the split. Her only way of doing that was to try to burn people who disagreed with her.
Right.
So, going back to modding.
what? Oh.
So we have sort of
we're having a conversation about modding? Oh.
This will inevitably show up at the end of the modcast.
Well, no, I'm not recording at the minute. There was no point.
Right. But I am.
I'll start recording. Record date, Saturday the 20th of November 2018. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.